I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, 1 million reasons to put an end to the homeless industrial complex and get people the help they need by getting government out of the way.
You have to ask, why is it there in the first place? Why are we not picking up the trash in our city?
Also, the unhinged election attacks continue. This one takes us to the city of Seattle and everyone's favorite birdcage liner, The Stranger. Plus, yesterday's conspiracy is today's front page news. All of that coming up today on Undivided. Remember, this is a people-powered podcast. If you like the show, support us for $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A lot to get to today. We want to start with a couple follow-ups because, of course, if we report on a story, we don't just leave it behind. If there are advancements in that story, we want to bring it to you. Two stories in particular. We've been talking about this controversy over a transgender runner for Seattle Academy, a biological boy competing against girls, and some protesters who were told to leave under threat of arrest the recent semifinals in cross country. So we'll have an update on that. And also, the King County Republican Party is not so pleased with some things Semi Bird said on this show, and they wanted to respond, so we will certainly give them an opportunity. So let's start with the update on the transgender runner protest that ended with about six people being told to leave the premises of the track over at South Whidbey High School, where this happened. So there were two videos we played for you on the show yesterday that were taken by these protesters who had signs like "Defend Women's Sports" and "Boys are not girls." Well, they had, and I think the school anticipated their arrival. They had, we learned, contacted law enforcement prior because this had become such a controversy because a national figure, Riley Gaines, a former collegiate swimmer, has brought attention to it. So they were expecting protesters. So they get there, they got these signs. The school says, "You gotta leave." Parents say, "No," or these citizens say, "No." And so the school at first asked the city of Langley Police Department to intervene.
"Do whatever you want, but you need to leave."
"But can
we
you
will
tell
put
us
our
the
signs
thing?
Away. I cannot remove them. Okay. I spoke with my chief last night and we discussed kind of the issue at hand."
"Uh-huh."
"And I cannot remove them."
"Okay. Well, the sheriff's will then."
"Okay. You're welcome to call them out."
"Okay.
I cannot do that though."
"Okay.
Okay."
Yeah, so that was interesting. Langley PD officers like, "Unless they get violent, we're not going to do anything. I already talked to my chief about it." The school says, "Well, the sheriff's office will," and indeed they called the sheriff's office, Island County Sheriff's Office, and they did.
"You are not allowed to be here. This gentleman here is responsible for this property. He has asked you nicely to leave. Either you can leave and go out to the road and protest all you want. You're more than welcome to. Okay? No questions asked, no other words said. You can leave that way, or you can be arrested for trespass."
Yeah, so they opted to leave and not get arrested for trespass, and I believe they went out to the road and waved their signs. So there were two things when we first brought you the story yesterday that we were actively trying to understand and follow up on. So we'd placed calls to the Langley Police Department and the Island County Sheriff's Office. I have not heard back from the Langley Police Department. I did, however, have a very long, nice phone chat with the sheriff up in Island County yesterday, and he told me, you know, a couple things that, yes, kind of what we're seeing in that video is reflective of what happened. What he said is that the school had let the sheriff's office know beforehand that there might be an issue. He said that this is not Langley PD jurisdiction, so he doesn't know why there was even a Langley PD officer who was there suggesting that they had, you know, authority to be able to intervene. He said, "No, this is definitely Island County Sheriff's Office territory, so that's why they took action on this." And he says what the school conveyed to the deputy there is that they felt as if these individuals were causing a disturbance. So they had, they were peaceful. I don't think anybody's denying that they were peaceful, but they had these signs and they were standing at one of the main entrances, and there had been some words exchanged, according to what the sheriff told me that he heard from the school, people pro and against, but the school felt as if it was causing a disturbance. And so that is what the sheriff said. The sheriff, however, has also said that he feels like there's some misinformation information circulating online about what his deputies did or did not do. He said he's seen people saying that deputies went into the stands and removed anyone who doesn't want biological boys competing against women. He says that's not true. He says there were some individuals wearing t-shirts and they treated that just like people with signs and asked them to leave. So the other question yesterday that I frankly did not know and did not have an answer to and that we were trying to effort is, what law did they break? Because certainly the First Amendment, you know, is a big one that protects speech. What I didn't know is, to what extent can someone protest on public school grounds? You know, it's a public school paid for with taxpayer funds. We have the First Amendment, but there are limitations under RCW, so the Revised Code of Washington. And the sheriff in Island County pointed me to two in particular. He said both of these probably don't apply here, but there are two in particular that would allow this sort of free speech, exercise of free speech, to be limited on school grounds. So I'm not going to read the whole laws for you, but if you want to go look them up so you know what you can and cannot do on a public school property if you're planning on doing this protest at the state meet, RCW 28A635030, disturbing school activities or meetings. Any person who shall willfully create a disturbance on school premises during school hours or at school activities or school meetings shall be guilty of a misdemeanor, the penalty for which shall be a fine in any sum not more than $50. So that seems to be the RCW that they were using here. Now there's a second one, but this one is a little more serious. It says willfully disobeying school administrative personnel or refusing to leave public property. So basically, if you're like on school property drunk or something, or posing a risk or a threat to others. So that's kind of the more serious. It doesn't seem like that was the case with these protesters. Now, I will say, of that first RCW, which seems to be the one that the sheriff's office, and I spoke to the sheriff himself, that they used to enforce this, there's still a little gray area there. Because when you say any person who willfully creates a disturbance, I think reasonable people can disagree that they were creating a disturbance. Is it a disturbance to be holding signs peacefully outside the gates of the track and field complex? I don't know if I have an answer to that because I wasn't there. I don't know everything they said. I don't know the interactions that they had with people who might have been opposed to the signs that they had. But the bottom line was, it seemed like it was up to the school administrator to decide whether he believed they were creating a disturbance, and then the sheriff's office came in and forced it. Now, if there were to have been arrests, and then this went to court, I'd be curious how that would play out. The bottom line is, though, and I said it yesterday, I think there's what's legal and there's what's right. I don't know if I like the idea of, first of all, opening up school grounds to basically anyone who wants to protest. I mean, think of how wrong that could go. But also, these are kids participating in track and field. You might not like the WIAA policy of allowing transgender athletes, but the kids didn't do it. And they're there trying to compete at the highest levels in high school athletics. They're trying to make it to state. So I just think as adults, it's like, okay, you have your strong political beliefs that I agree with, by the way, that it doesn't make sense to allow biological boys or men to compete against biological girls or women. But I think there's other ways that you can go about it. So I don't think this story is going away. I'm sure that there'll be stories like this and video like this coming out of the state meet. But we just wanted to follow up and say there are RCWs on the books that limit the type of free speech, for lack of a better phrase, that you can engage in on school property if it's deemed that you're causing a disturbance. All right, follow-up number two. We had Semi Byrd on the show, a Republican candidate for governor of Washington. And the genesis of that was I had heard some things he said at a KTTH Freedom Series event, a political forum essentially, where it seemed to me like he was, one, really angsty about feeling like the mainstream structure is out working against him. And that's something that he came on and talked about, and he gave an example. So he basically says you have big donors and the party structure that's opposed to him because they want Dave Reichert. They're just trying to hold him down, essentially. And he used an example of an experience he had at it actually happened a few days ago, the King County Republican Party's annual dinner.
The leadership of the Republican Party in King County is definitely not in support of Semi Byrd. That was evidenced when I was disrespected at their Liberty dinner the other night, when the MC that was chosen began to introduce, and by the way, again, has no ill reflection on Dave. This is nothing ill on Dave. Behind all the bidding paddles has had Dave's logo on it, right? And so at the very beginning of the event, which I was in attendance, I was invited to participate. I was excited to be there. And we hear the MC, John Curley, say, and look at your paddles. And on the back, and now I'm just summarizing, you'll see the logo of your next governor of Washington State, Dave Reichert. And Simi Bird is sitting there. And again, I'm not a sensitive little child. Again, I'm a big boy, right? I served in combat and done all that other stuff. But I hope that you and maybe others, through that process of empathy, can say, wow, is that really how the party should have welcomed me when Dave hasn't been endorsed and I haven't been endorsed?
Yeah. So he says, I'm not a sensitive little child, but he was clearly very offended by that. And I told him at the time, if that happened the way that you said it happened, I'd be offended by that too. If I'm still a candidate in the race and I go in and I'm invited to a dinner and it's got my opponent's face on everyone's paddles. Yeah, I get it. The issue is the King County Republican Party sent me an email last night and they told us that they were highly disappointed to see Sammy Bird's mischaracterization of events that happened at our recent dinner. So we want to send you an accurate depiction. So they started with this issue of Dave's logos, Dave Reichert's campaign logos on the back of the bid cards. They said the Reichert for governor campaign bought a sponsorship that allowed the placement of his logo on those bid cards. This is a fundraising initiative. We do it every dinner, and it is available on a first-come, first-served basis for any campaign or organization that would like to have their logo placed. This was absolutely not any sort of in-kind donation or endorsement on behalf of the King County GOP. And so that makes a lot of sense. And I've seen it at many other political fundraisers. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking maybe that's what happened here, is his campaign purchased that basically as an opportunity, a sponsorship opportunity. Because I've been at, for instance, when I'm asked to come speak at political conferences and stuff, sometimes during election years, you will have a political candidate who hosts the after party. But it's really just they're doing it and they've got their signage up everywhere and it's a way for them to get their name out there and to bring in donors. So the other issue that King County Republicans wanted to address is the comment made by our friend John Curley, Nicole. He's always causing trouble, John Curley, who was the auctioneer. John Curley, of course, a radio host in Seattle, that he said that on the back of the paddles is the name of the next governor. And Sammy Bird's like, what the heck? So the King County Republican Party told us in a statement, Sammy Bird mentioned our auctioneer, who is completely independent of the party, and occupies no formal leadership position, introduced Dave Reichert as our next governor. They said that did in fact happen, but he was not using a script provided by the King County GOP or any script at all, to their knowledge, which also sounds like John. He's not so much a script kind of guy. And then they went on to clarify about whether Semi was invited to the event or how that all went down. They said, we offered the Bird for Governor campaign a campaign table at our event, which they accepted, but Semi gave us no indication he would be attending the event himself. He independently purchased a ticket a few days before the event and then showed up. Furthermore, John Curley offered some kind words towards Semi Bird regarding how many signs he has seen for Semi after he pointed out his mistake in referring to Reichert as our next governor, given we have two viable candidates currently running for the office. And then they go on to say that the chairman of the King County GOP recognized the candidates in the room after that incident, including Sammy Bird, and noted the loud applause that Mr. Bird received when he was mentioned by the chairman. But here's the kicker. And this to me is like, wow, they're ticked off. It's like sort of the gloves are off. They say at this point, Sammy Bird riled up many of his supporters, berated our staff, and made a very notable exit of the event. He didn't mention that to us, that he left. The King County GOP felt very bad for what occurred, so we fully refunded Semi's campaign table, which he also made no mention of. Okay. So thank you to the King County Republican Party for sharing your perspective on what happened there. Certainly there were some elements in there that Semi did not talk about. I mean, I'm interested to hear more about what they say that, you know, he berated their staff. But here's my bottom line on all this. Get it together. Republican Party in general, get it together. I mean, you have a better opportunity than certainly in the 15 years I've lived in Washington State, and I would argue maybe even for the last 40 years, to have a Republican governor elected. And this is the kind of like childish, whiny, complainy, infighting, drama. It's actually a little bit embarrassing that this is how all of this is happening. So anyway, I guess you can air your grievances here on the podcast, but I don't think that any of this makes Semi Byrd look particularly good. I don't think it makes Republicans look particularly good. So I'm going to take one for the swear jar today. Get your shit together.
Oh, no. Wow.
Sorry, babe. Mike won't let me swear. Yeah. I had to. Get your shit together. And I will gladly put now $40 in the swear jar for that. It's $20 for swearing, $1 for a sword. Wow.
Worth it.
Worth it. Get it together. All right. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, as we speak, I believe, is having a press conference. And we're going to play some clips from it on the show tomorrow. But I thought we could talk about it today and I could gauge your opinions on it. Because I've been clear on this issue that it bothers me. I don't understand the effort to go backward when it comes to fighting racism and discrimination. And I really feel like government programs that prioritize people and businesses on the basis of immutable characteristics like the color of their skin or their gender or their sexual orientation is incredibly discriminatory. And I talked about this in relation to a little while ago, the city of Seattle, I think it was maybe 6 months ago or something, the city of Seattle had said that, you know, for all its empty storefronts downtown, they were going to prioritize, you know, business owners of color. And it's like, nobody wants to be a business owner downtown. If there's anyone, regardless of the color of their skin, who wants one of those empty storefronts that's been boarded up since the summer of 2020, by all means, let them use it. Like, let's not be picky here. But anyway, so today, the mayor of Seattle is signing an executive order that would expand contracting equity, is how they put it. And I'll get to our, we made this our daily subscriber poll, which I'll get to in a moment, but let me just explain what he's signing. So his executive order expands contracting equity and makes it easier for small businesses, particularly women and minority-owned businesses, to work with the city of Seattle. And the mayor said in his press release that those businesses have been disproportionately underutilized in public contracting. So essentially, they're going to make it easier for, if you're a woman or a person of color, to get a government contract with the city of Seattle. I just have an issue with that. I think that if you, I believe in a meritocracy. I think the best thing that could happen for this country, especially in this woke atmosphere, is to get out of it and move toward a meritocracy, which is what people were fighting for in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And now we're like, all of a sudden, oh, let's go back. Let's make up for the horrible wrongs of the past by just going in the opposite direction. It's just really ridiculous. So anyway, I sent out our daily subscriber show poll this morning on this very subject. I said, should the city of Seattle prioritize contracts with women and minority-owned businesses? And I will say most of you say no in the poll so far, and we keep those polls open throughout the week. So please feel free to go weigh in on Patreon or Locals if you're a subscriber. But there were some interesting and I think thoughtful responses from subscribers on this today. Toby said, I think the best quality and or bid needs to prevail. With that said, I have no issues with the city of Seattle demanding more DEI progress of all city-managed projects and vendors involved, including incentives and or training. And you actually bring up a good point there, Toby, that I didn't even consider, which is something else the city needs to do is who's going to do it for the best price? I mean, obviously, you got to weigh quality and all that stuff. But I feel like the government hands out bids based on skin color and weird characteristics, and they don't even care how much it costs. They're like, oh, this person, oh, they're a black-owned business, but it's going to cost us 10 times more. Give it to them anyway. Really good point. Diana said, as a woman who worked in the male-dominated world of engineering, I believe you must be fair and balanced. It was more important for me to be successful based on my skills, not the body I was born in. I suspect many women feel that way. Julie had a slightly different opinion than that. She said, as a former woman-owned business, I was going to read it as a former woman, which is, that's okay, I'll welcome as a former woman-owned business, I can attest to how hard it was to get government contracts. Set-asides gave our small business a foot in the door to compete. It didn't guarantee a contract, just helped level the playing field a bit. Let's see, on Locals, Chris said, the real question is, are those businesses being discriminated against or are others more qualified? I'm all for promoting women and minority-owned businesses as long as they are equally qualified. And I tend to agree with that. You know, what are the metrics to determine whether someone gets a city contract? What are those metrics and who best meets them? A metric shouldn't be the color of your flesh. A metric shouldn't be what's going on down there or up here. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. But I will say, Shoot, I went so long without snorting yesterday. Mm. I owe so much money to the jar right now. It's a little mortifying. I might need to cut the dog food budget back a little bit this month. Not that fancy stuff. You remember when, like, the government, Nicole, was trying to prop up, like, failing journalistic endeavors, you know, like giving them tax breaks, and there were government entities in the state because they're like, oh, local news is important, which I agree, mm-hmm. You know, giving tax breaks and helping with funds and stuff. And I was like, what are the chances if I applied as a small newsroom that Jay Inslee's government would help me out?
What are the chances? Ooh, slim. I won't say none, but slim.
I mean, I'm not interested in running this show off the taxpayer teat, so I won't apply. But mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kind of interested in, like, applying for something like that and then watching them reject me on the basis of my politics. And then we're so happy these days, so lawsuits right. for everyone.
Yep.
But then I got you get money from the taxpayers, which I'm not okay with either. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. But
give it back.
Well, I could also
giving back.
I could also apply for a woman-owned business.
You absolutely could.
Advantage incentive. I don't know if you knew, but I am a woman. Thank you for not assuming. But yeah, this kind of stuff is ridiculous. We got to move away from identitarianism. We got to move toward a meritocracy. That's equality. That's true equality. That's true equity, as much as I hate that word. So we'll follow up with some clips from the mayor on this. But he knows I've been critical of him on this issue before, this very topic. So I wonder if he tries to, sometimes in his press conferences, he'll like address criticism that he knows is going to come and try to couch it. And I'm sure he'll be like, this isn't discrimination against white people. So we'll see. We'll play some clips tomorrow. All right. As you guys know, the economic situation is uncertain. I think everybody feels that, right? We feel the weight of that. Bidenomics is just built on trillions of dollars in printed money. And our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital says it's only a matter of time before that house of cards that Biden has built with Bidenomics comes crashing down. And the real question is, have you managed your risk to help protect your retirement portfolio?
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah, and here's the deal. You all work too hard to let your hard-earned retirement be put in jeopardy. So whether it's with Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital or someone else, make sure that you're taking steps to manage your risk before the eventuality that things collapse because of the state of the economy. So check out knowyourriskradio.com. And Zach hosts a weekly radio show. He also gives this sort of advice every single week. So if you're interested in learning how to manage your risk, whether you're close to retirement or like me, looking at retirement many moons from now, make sure you manage your risk. KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right, I talk a lot about the homeless industrial complex because it is a real thing. I used to be a denier, but I used to be a denier of a lot of stuff. And then I just woke up, red-pilled one day, just like that. The homeless industrial complex is undeniable to me because you have, I mean, look at hundreds of millions, billions of dollars that are spent, and we have a worse homeless crisis now than we've ever had. And that is telling you that what they're doing is not working. And the underlying political environment is creating a situation where we have more people entering homelessness on our streets than we are pulling out of homelessness. And that's because we've essentially de facto legalized drugs. We don't hold people accountable for crimes that they commit, perhaps to fund a drug habit, et cetera. And so it's this whole environment that is just sort of leading to this really sad, deadly situation on our streets. And then you can throw billions of dollars at it because you have elected officials who keep calling it a housing crisis when it's not. They don't even identify the problem properly. So, of course, it's never going to get fixed. So all that money is going into this giant government cog, bureaucracy, and red tape. It's not going anywhere. At the same time, you have citizens who have become so fed up with that that they are trying to take steps to make the problem better, to help their city, and they're doing it much more effectively and for far less money than the government ever has. And one of those entities, I've talked about them a lot on the show, is We Heart Seattle. So we had Andrea Suarez on the show last week just to talk about a voting initiative, but she also teased for us some data that was going to be coming out that is now out, and we'll dive into it. But they've announced that We Heart Seattle, over the last 3 years, which is just a group of citizen volunteers, they go out, they clean up homeless encampments. While they're there, they connect with homeless people, try to understand their situation, connect them to services if they can. Again, a group of volunteers that operates based on donations. They have cleaned up now more than 1 million pounds of trash across the city of Seattle. Here's Andrea.
We know we've picked up 1 million pounds of trash. We know we've served almost every zip code in the city of Seattle. And when you look at the heat map, we're like, wow, it's really glaring how pervasive the issue is and how predominant it is in two particular voting districts. Queen Anne, we have done North and West Queen Anne Greenbelts, Kinnear Park. Hundreds of thousands of pounds have been there for over a decade.
Is that the one me and my subscribers came to?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That day we picked up 10,000 pounds. And in Soto and that in kind of lower industrial area in China, in International District, we probably picked up at that camp, you know, gosh, 100,000 pounds alone. So, and we've been in the jungle and picked up in that green belt as well. So, yeah, it is obvious that there are two districts in particular where most of our trash was picked up.
And what's the point in you guys putting out those statistics?
I think it's just important to visualize how much trash we have picked up and where it is. And you have to ask, why is it there in the first place? Why are we not picking up the trash in our city? I mean, we were finding typewriters from the 80s and Coke bottles from the 90s and receipts and paperwork that was artifacts that had indicated that this trash had been there for years. And why, you know, when you say, why hasn't the government, you know, pick this up, what's going on? There's a policy of not allowing contractors to go on slopes. And there's the other very inhumane policy of not being able to go within 20 feet of tents. They don't want any contractors, nobody, unless you are that very specific and small outreach team. And to that I say, everybody needs to be an outreach worker. Everybody needs to be doing welfare checks on these tents. And anybody can really get out and pick up the garbage, as you saw in that transformational day in May. We all need to be hands on deck, and they is you. We all have to take a part in this crisis, including outreach.
Yeah, and I admire Andrea for that. I admire her saying, I'm not just going to sit back and complain and wish a government that has never stepped up to this crisis is eventually one day going to step up once all of our parks are buried under tons and tons of trash. I admire her for saying, I'm going to get up and I'm going to try to help. And she is doing an absolutely fantastic job. But that doesn't negate the failure of the government and our the urgent need for us to recognize that and to stop the wasted funds that are going to the government to address this crisis. I mean, the depth of the trash that Andrea and her volunteers have picked up is a direct reflection of the depth of the failure of government. And I think what it really proves is that the government needs to get out of the way. If we really want to make sure that people in need are getting help, which I hope every single one of us does, I think the government needs to get out of the way. And I'm not saying the government doesn't have some sort of role in that process, but two things need to happen. The government bureaucracy and cog needs to account for less of the spending than the people who are actually out there doing the work. And these outside contractors, these nonprofits that the city partners with that our taxpayer funds go to, yes, they need to be watched like hawks. Of course, they still have to be accountable for their outcomes and for what they're doing. But we've had this government bureaucracy that not only has been burning through billions and billions of dollars, but sending billions of dollars to these outside entities to do work that they never, never properly account for. And so there's a lot that needs to happen. But when I look at what Andrea Suarez, a woman who woke up one day and decided she was sick of the trash in the homeless encampment at her local park, and has turned that into, has turned that frustration, that anger, that motivation, that love of city into 1 million pounds of trash picked up, work the government should have been doing. When I look at that, I see the power of private citizens versus the incompetence of the government. And it tells me a lot about what needs to happen in order for this homeless crisis to get better. If we keep feeding the homeless industrial complex, it will keep eating whatever we're willing to feed it until we decide it's okay to let it starve to death. Now, there's one other element of this data that We Heart Seattle put out about the 1 million pounds of trash. And I think it's important to understand where it's coming from, because the vast majority of their encampment cleanups over the past 3 years have been in two Seattle City Council districts. Does anyone want to guess which ones? Downtown Seattle, Andrew Lewis, and District 2, the International District, South Seattle. So you have it happening in the two council districts, and I can show you a map here. In the two council districts, so in Andrew Lewis's, they've had 111 encampment-related cleanups. In Councilwoman Tammy Morales's district, 92. Think about that, 92 encampment-related cleanups. And then they also had a map that kind of pinpointed more directly where some of these actual cleanups are happening. And a lot of it, again, in South Seattle. The community, every council member is like, we care about that community. They have a higher population of people of color. Well, you're just allowing homeless camps to proliferate in that community. And then, of course, downtown, just north of downtown, et cetera. So to me, it is another illustration of the failure of those two council members in particular. Do you feel like, I mean, residents downtown, many of them, and many in South Seattle, and for sure in the International District, believe that their council members have failed them? I mean, Andrew Lewis, in the time you've been in office, 111, you've been in office now for just over 3 years, 111 encampment cleanups from We Heart Seattle alone, from a private citizen volunteer group in your district. How many of those encampment cleanups do you guess Andrew Lewis has been to? I don't know the answer. I'm going to guess none. I'll ask Andrea. I'm going to guess none. And for sure, I'm going to guess none for Tammy Morales. So not only are these numbers an indictment of the homeless industrial complex, but they are also an indictment of council members who truly do not care about law-abiding citizens, about the quality of life in their districts, and they only care about policies that are going to make activists happy, the Stop the Sweep crowd. All right, been talking about Firstmark Insurance. It's a weird time in the insurance industry right now, and you might know this because you see some headlines about it, you know, especially with the crime crisis, small businesses dealing with, you know, break-in after break-in. And this is a tricky time to file claims if that's happening to you, because you have news of insurance companies and people saying, oh, I've been dropped by insurance company because I filed too many claims related to crime. So it's a really important time, whether you're private homeowner or a business owner, to have someone on your side, to have someone actually working for you, not the insurance companies, to navigate this. And I will tell you, I love Firstmark Insurance. I think everyone out there, everyone needs insurance. I would seriously encourage you to take the Firstmark Challenge to see if Firstmark is a good fit for you, because they have, and I talked to Dave Taylor, the CEO of Firstmark, about this. It's not just about the best price. It's not just about, you know, finding you the best insurance, although those things are important. It's also about the service that comes with it.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate. And it's having the service behind it when you need it. Right. So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No. Yeah, they might be able to save you money. They're certainly not going to be able to do it in 15 minutes or less, though. And honestly, I think that's the reflection of being a solid company with good values that's actually trying to work hard for you to make sure that you get the best rates, that you get the best coverage that you can get, but also that they're providing you excellent customer service. They're a local company, veteran-owned. So again, I will recommend it till the cows come home. Suddenly, Nicole just laughs at me. I love working with Firstmark Insurance. Take the Firstmark Challenge. It's going to take you an hour of your time and an investment, but what you get out of that is really so valuable. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, we've been talking all week about unhinged election attacks where people are being vilified for even having squishy little ties to people who might be Republicans. The latest story takes us to the city of Seattle. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. Okay, we are going to talk about the Seattle City Council races. I know some of you are like, we don't live in Seattle, Brandy. Some of you might. But also, remember, what happens in Seattle impacts the entire state of Washington. And I would argue, impacts policies eventually all the way at Congress in Washington, D.C. Some of the craziest leftist progressive policies that are now being talked about nationally, they started here. And so, you know, defund the police movement and on tax Amazon, all these things, minimum wage. So it's important to not only pay attention to what's happening in Seattle politics, but to really feel an investment in what's happening in the city of Seattle. It's the economic engine of our entire state. If Seattle doesn't succeed, the state's in big trouble. So I have said I think the most important race on anyone's ballot next Tuesday is the race for District 7 Seattle City Council. Andrew Lewis, flip-flopper extraordinaire, is running against a Navy veteran named Bob Kettle. Now, to be clear, I don't think there is much difference between them from an ideological perspective. They're both, I wouldn't even call them progressives. I would say they're liberal Democrats, maybe just on the verge of progressive. The difference is that Bob Kettle isn't Andrew Lewis. Andrew Lewis has shown time and time again that he is not mature enough for that job. And I'm not just saying that because he looks like a choir boy. He, Nicole, sorry, am I being not very undivided today?
That's just random.
Cherub. a flip-flopping cherub. Wow, really off track. So Andrew Lewis, in 2019, ran for his job on the promise to hire more police officers. I was there when he did it. I was there during the clip where everybody plays of him saying, oh, we have the best police, we need more police, because I was moderating the debate when he was running in 2019 where he said that. So then he turns around 6 months later, what does he do? He pledges to defund police by 50%. And then in June, just this past June, which is the subject of a lawsuit that we filed for public records related to this vote, he says, tells everybody, oh yeah, I'm gonna vote to pass this common sense drug ordinance. I'm gonna vote for it. Turns around at the last second, God knows why, we're trying to find out, and cast the deciding no vote. Can't be trusted, no backbone, absolute, if you look in the dictionary, political cowardice, Andrew Lewis's face right there. So it's not that I particularly like Bob Kettle. I don't really know the guy. We've invited him on. He hasn't come on with us, I'm sure, because he doesn't want to be tied to the big, scary right-wing podcast with crazy, you know, Nazi Barbie Brandy. Whatever. But he's not Andrew Lewis. There have to be consequences for people who prove that they're incompetent, who prove that they don't actually care about the citizens they're serving. So there has to be consequences for Andrew Lewis. Will Bob Kettle be any better? I don't know. But here's the thing. So The Stranger, which is the Seattle's alt weekly, a good birdcage liner, you use it for other things. So The Stranger, which whenever they make endorsements, I'm always like, okay, vote for the opposite. Because I really think The Stranger has gotten us into part of this mess because for some reason they've convinced a big swath of progressives in Seattle that their endorsement is what matters and their opinions of their writers are what matters, which is wild to me. But anyway, I want you to read with me, along with me, the article they just published about Bob Kettle. Again, Bob Kettle is a Democrat. Not that much different when it comes to policy preferences than Andrew Lewis. The headline in The Stranger, City Council candidate Bob Kettle promoted right-wing endorsements. There it is again, that right-wing pesky word. The subhead, a Trumper city attorney, a conservative hooper, and GOP chairman Jim Walsh's number one fan. So let's read into this article, which is based on the premise that a reporter at The Stranger saw Bob Kettle's list of endorsements, saw some in there that she thinks were right-wing, so she went to the Bob Kettle campaign demanding that they explain why he would have these right-wing endorsements. So the article writes, self-described girl dad and veteran Bob Kettle loves to remind everyone that he's a Democrat, or as the most conservative council member calls it, a pragmatic progressive. In fact, when the Stranger Election Control Board asked the city council candidates in District 7 who they voted for in the 2020 presidential election, Kettle proudly showed the board a photo of him holding an American flag and giving a thumbs up next to a Veterans for Biden yard sign on election day. But The writer at The Stranger goes on to say, some of Kettle's endorsements don't paint the candidate in the bluest light. His website boasts nods from several Republicans, oh no, including Republican City Attorney Ann Davison, former Sacramento Kings basketball player Spencer Hawes, and Cowlitz County Young Republicans co-founder Bentley Fraville. Okay, so first of all, two of those people, why does he even have them as endorsements on their side? Who knows who the Cowlitz County Young Republicans co-founder is? And who cares what former Sacramento Kings basketball player Spencer Hawes, am I even saying that right?
Yeah.
Has to say.
I'm annoyed by the endorsements. I mean, Ferguson's, it's just a bunch of names.
So these things seem useless to me. But you notice in there that he also has Republican City Attorney Ann Davison. Okay, let's read on, shall we? Because the Stranger writer gets into why having an endorsement for the Seattle City Attorney is so problematic. So remember, Ann Davison ran for City Council previously, and she was a Democrat at the time. And she felt like she was vilified. So what did she do? She left the Democratic Party. She ran as a Republican for lieutenant governor. She was a Republican for like 2 minutes. And then she turned around and ran for city attorney, which is technically a nonpartisan race, but The Stranger would never let anyone forget that she was a Republican for 2 minutes. So anyway, The Stranger goes on to write, the company Kettle keeps. Kettle is the only candidate in any of the 7 council races to earn and display an endorsement from Republican City Attorney Ann Davison. Davison infamously left the Democratic Party in 2020 in a dramatic video as part of the hashtag walkaway movement, which aimed to siphon Trump votes from disgruntled moderates and closeted conservatives. During her 2020 campaign for lieutenant governor, she also promoted far-right propaganda against the state's comprehensive sex ed bill, teamed up with a Stop the Steal conspiracy theorist for an anti-Democrat video, and posted a posted a thin blue line flag online, which a normie Democrat would not dare do in the thick of the resurgent Black Lives Matter movement. Let me just break that down for a second. So Ann Davison is problematic because she posted a thin blue line flag. She's problematic because she pushed back against comprehensive sex ed. She's controversial because she appeared in a video talking about how the Democratic Party had gone so much to the extremes, you know, that she was part of the walkaway movement, which was a movement because Democrats were tired of being treated and being subjected to exactly what The Stranger is subjecting Ann Davison to here. Like, is it any surprise she left the Democrat Party? And so it's just wild to me. Thin blue line flag. Oh, so controversial. So here you have Ann Davison, who's barely a Republican. I'd categorize her more as an independent, who's doing fantastic things when it comes to public safety in the city of Seattle. But it is horrible that Bob Kettle, who says he's a Democrat, would dare list an endorsement from the sitting Seattle city attorney because she's such a Trumper, because she walked away from the Democratic Party. Yeah, walking away from the Democratic Party absolutely makes you a Trumper. And if that doesn't, you know what does? Having a thin blue line flag to signify that you support law enforcement. Gasp. Oh, that's so terrible. So anyway, it bothers me that Ann Davison is being vilified in a race that she's not even running in. Like, the Stranger has to vilify the only elected Republican that we've had in Seattle in like decades. But here's what bothers me more. Oh, here's what bothers me more. Bob Kettle's reaction to it. Bob Kettle's reaction to it. So before I even take that down, before I even read it, how would you hope, Nicole, that Bob Kettle would react? If The Stranger reached out and said, hey, you have some endorsements that are problematic, will you explain them? What is your hope for how Bob Kettle would react to The Stranger?
Well, I mean, I hope he gives a respectful nod to people that support him, saying, I appreciate their endorsements and, you know, sorry you feel that way.
Yes. That is what a reasonable, rational person would do. Clearly, mm-hmm. these are endorsements you decided to list for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. I would also argue it would be even more rational for him or his campaign to hang up and or tell them to kick rocks.
I know, right? He won't respond to us. Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to answer to a 20-year-old stranger reporter who, you know, with blue hair. Right. Sorry, bye. That's how I would handle it. Because you know that they're not going to give you any sort of fair shake.
No.
Their questions are already unhinged. The questions in the framing of this even being a story is already unhinged. So what do you think you gain if you respond? Unfortunately, that is not what Bob Kettle's campaign mm-hmm. did. What did they do? They just rolled over. And not only did they respond and acquiesce to this absolute lunacy, they went to the extent of trying to provide this stranger reporter with pictures to prove that, no, Bob's a Democrat. Bob, look at the pictures. Bob's a Democrat. No, you can put it up. You can put it up now. They said, the stranger writes, Kettle's campaign manager, Rebecca Duren, thanked the stranger for flagging the endorsements and said they would review them. Quote, Bob is a strong Democrat, Duren said. As far as anyone who questions Bob's credentials as a dedicated Democrat, please share these photos of Bob working his butt off to get the Democratic team elected. And they shared some photos with the stranger, completely unprompted, of him appearing with Patty Murray and campaigning for Patty Murray. And then the stranger says that the campaign also attached two photos of Kettle with Senator Patty Murray and, upon request, the picture of him with the Biden sign. So he sends them the pictures. The campaign sends the pictures of him with Patty Murray. And the stranger's like, well, that's not good enough. Can I get the picture of him? He says he has a picture of him and a Biden sign so we can really prove your Democrat bona fides. So here you have Bob Kettle absolutely kowtow caving to some kid at the stranger with lefty viewpoints who isn't doing anything for productive for the city at all. The campaign's falling over itself to provide photo evidence that Bob Kettle's actually a Democrat. Why? That's crazy. How utterly disappointing is that? And now, 6 days out from the election, I'm left with the realization that downtown Seattle, which needs strong representation more than ever, has two candidates on the ballot without a backbone. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, Nicole, do we have time for a second unbelievable today?
Sure.
Because, you know,
we don't have anybody stopping us at one.
That's true. Let's get to another edition of Unbelievable. All right, Governor Jansley, still not done lying about the carbon tax. Still not done lying about the program.
Spin it. Spin it. I mean, it's a lie.
It's a lie.
But I mean, we're all feeling it, and he wants to be like, it's okay, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Anything they can say to try to distract from the pain of the pump. Anything at all. So, of course, it's called the Climate Commitment Act. I just call it the carbon tax. Mm-hmm. But the governor had this big, you know, press conference, and he's been talking about ferries and all this stuff, and he's been out, you know, taking videos. So anyway, he sends out this tweet. And I want you to really think about what's not adding up here, okay? I want you to think about that as I read it. He says, it's got a picture of a young man who's clearly on some sort of public transit, maybe
light
rail. It's
actually a whole video. They produced a video.
Okay, I'm not going to watch it.
This is a shot of the video.
Governor Inslee says, 1 year ago, free transit and ferry options became available to youth all across Washington thanks to funding from the Climate Commitment Act. In that first year, WAW youth have enjoyed 8.3 million free rides. It's just one way the Climate Commitment Act funding is helping families. Let's keep going. Okay, so he's like, hey, this Climate Commitment Act, the thing that's raising prices 50 cents at the gas pump per gallon, don't worry about that, how that's hurting Washington families. Let's talk about how it's helping Washington families. And 1 year ago, we started giving free rides on buses and transit and ferries to kids. And there's been 8.3 million free rides so far, thanks to the Climate Commitment Act.
And I'm going to throw in a Doryism here, but it's not free.
Well, yeah, it's also not
free.
It's
not free.
It's not free. But here's the thing. Anybody come up with what's wrong with that? The Climate Commitment Act and the carbon tax and the cap and trade program didn't begin until this year. It didn't start collecting money until this year. How could the Climate Commitment Act have started funding 1 year ago before it was collecting any revenue, free rides on the ferries and transit for youth? It couldn't have. But he wants to spin it. And look, they could, you know, oh, we're going to fund it now on this end or whatever. We know it's important. So that's where this money is going to end up going to. And that's what it's been budgeted for, whatever. But it's still not true the way that you framed it. But the governor is desperate, absolutely desperate, because this climate thing matters more to him than anything else, than any other aspect of his legacy. And he's terrified that he's going to leave office and his legacy is going to be absolutely crapping on working class Washingtonians. So he's clearly, there's no end in sight to how he is willing to manipulate, to lie, to gaslight, so he can leave office without the majority of Washingtonians realizing that this whole program is an absolute farce. Unbelievable. All right, I've been talking about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan because I just feel so good on the program. Lost 37 pounds, most of that in just the first 2 months. Actually, it's today. Oh my gosh, Nicole. Today is the anniversary of my start date on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program.
1 year.
1 year ago today. Wow. Whoa. Started it today last year. And by the end of the year, I was down almost 30 pounds. It was amazing. It was honestly life-changing. And it gives you tools to be able to, you know, maintain a healthy habits for life and not feel like you're on a diet. So if you've been thinking about it, so go ahead and call him today. Start on the day that I started, the anniversary of my start date. Call Dr. Ryan Coogan and say, hey, Brandi Crews started on this day last year, so I want to too. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Not every weight loss program is for every person, so make sure you schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team and just talk through it and see if it sounds like something that you would be able to do. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I am accepting anniversary gifts. The anniversary. No sweets, though. No sweets, though. All right. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State. I feel like I'm really maybe over-caffeinated today.
I think both of us are. I'm feeling a little
jittery.
Jumpy, yeah, jittery.
Maybe over-caffeinated. I'll try to calm down a little bit. Okay.
All good. No, good. Keep it.
Thank you. Okay. Just bringing it home. All right. Dipping outside Washington State. So there's an article that really caught my eye. And this was a Wire article, so it was published all over the place. But here is the headline. This is from the Seattle Times. FBI says Israel-Hamas war raises potential for attack against Americans. And this is coming from FBI Director Chris Wray. And that's not surprising. I mean, yeah, you've got this happening overseas. You have this increased vitriol, certainly anti-Semitism, Islamophobia as well. And so the fact that conflict raises the potential for attacks against Americans and terror attacks against Americans, that's really not a surprise. And also the potential that people who are maybe in solidarity with Hamas or sympathizers might carry out lone wolf attacks. But here's the problem. When I saw that headline, I was like, I swear that like a month ago, when conservative media was saying that was a potential, you know, the porous southern border, that they were told that's stupid. And indeed, I went back and found the headline because I remember it very vividly. October 12th, NBC News. Their headline, conservatives stoke fears of a Hamas attack on U.S., but there's no credible threat, the FBI says. What? So you fast forward to October 31st, FBI says Israel-Hamas war raises potential for attack against Americans. I mean, you almost can't make this up. It's ridiculous. And it's not just NBC News' fault, the FBI. No credible threat. It doesn't seem like Christopher Wray and the FBI are talking about a specific credible threat right now either. They're just saying, yeah, of course, there's a war going on. There's a lot of hate and tensions and all of that. And it raises the specter that you could have someone who's sympathetic with Hamas carry out an attack against Americans in the U.S. Yeah. But because conservatives brought it up first, because conservatives said it, because conservatives tied it to the porous southern border where we know there have been captures of people on the terror watch list. I mean, it didn't take a rocket scientist to say, hey, if we know terrorists are getting in through the southern border, what's stopping a Hamas terror cell from getting in from the southern border and attacking the U.S. in some global day of jihad? But it's like, oh, NBC is like, no, the FBI says that's just one of those conservative conspiracy theories. Well, as we know, in this unbelievable climate we're in, yesterday's conspiracy theory is today's front page news. All right. George Santos, the member of Congress, a Republican from New York, who is like the grifter of all grifters, anything, you name it, he's lied about it, allegedly. Although some of his lies are very well documented and obviously true. Isn't he the one who said he's Jew-ish?
Yes.
Where, like, he said he's Jewish, so. And then when he was called out for not being Jewish, he's like, well, I said I was Jew-ish. Like, I know some people, you know?
So, I think he said one family member.
Oh, my gosh, this guy. So anyway, what's happening right now is really interesting. And I have, I don't want to call it mixed feelings, because I know what I think should happen. But I also understand the opposing arguments. So, Nicole, have we seen whether a vote happened? Can you look on that?
I'll
let me talk about this article from the Seattle Times. The headline, the House weighs historic decision on whether to expel George Santos. So the fellow, one of his fellow Republican Congress members from New York has started this effort to try to expel him. And this would be historic. The article says the five Republicans who are pushing for his exit. The five Republicans argue that there is enough evidence to oust Santos before a formal conviction, because he's been charged on all of these things, citing his former campaign treasurer pleading guilty and admitting in court that she conspired with Santos to commit wire fraud and identity theft, make false statements, and other counts. So they say, hey, we don't need, for instance, an ethics investigation, because there's this ongoing ethics investigation in Congress. We don't need that to play out to know that there's enough there to say he shouldn't represent his people in Congress anymore. It says, quote, everybody is innocent until proven guilty. It is the government's burden to prove you guilty, is what Santos said. Unfortunately, some of my colleagues want to be judge, jury, and executioner and deny me the right to due process. And the article talks about how there are Republicans who are split on this issue. It says House Republicans have varying views on whether Santos should be expelled. Some have called for him to resign. Some caution precedent setting without due process. A handful of Republicans expressed deep regret for how they spent the first half of the year voting to censure or kick Democrats off committees in retribution for when a Democratic majority did the same thing to their colleagues. So there's essentially this tension between, okay, George Santos is a pretty extreme example. And by the way, he would become the first congressman in more than 20 years to be removed in a motion brought forth by Republicans from his own delegation, according to this Washington Post article. So this doesn't happen very often. So the tension here is, okay, if we expel him before he's convicted of any crimes, or before there's a formal ethics investigation, which they've said might not conclude until November 17th, is that fair kind of due process when this is a duly elected member of Congress? And what would stop the other party from trying to do that more often? So there's sort of a tit for tat. And I get that. But to me, this is a situation that's a little bit different, because it is members of his own party, Republicans, who have introduced this motion to oust him. So I feel like that right there takes some of the politics out of it. And also, Congress is not a court of law. Congress doesn't have they don't have due process responsibilities where you'd have to find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in this situation to vote to expel him. So many of the things that George Santos has done and said have been demonstrable lies. And then you have, yes, some criminal indictments that I do agree have to work their way through courts. But even those aside, the lies that he's told about his education, about his background, to me, negate his election, because he was elected based on material falsehoods about who he was inherently, about his experience. So I would have no issue with George Santos being given the boot before, quote unquote, due process, given the preponderance of evidence. I do understand the opposing view. I do understand it, to try to avoid any sort of political games that might come up in the future. But I think this is an extraordinary circumstance and an extraordinarily unfit man. Nicole, any update on the vote? Did you see?
Yeah, I don't think it's happened yet.
Okay. And I know that Republicans feel like they're not going to have enough votes to actually oust him before. I think there's a lot of Republicans who want the cover of the ethics investigation. They want the ethics investigation to be completed. And then if it finds what we all know it'll probably find, then you'd oust him. All right. One more national. Elon Musk was on the Joe Rogan Experience. I laughed because Joe Rogan also wore a costume on his show yesterday. I don't know what it was, but his wig was just as bad as mine. It was like weird, like
maybe worse.
Blonde mini mullet kind of. So anyway, he had Elon Musk on and he asked him, and I haven't really heard Elon explain it like this when it comes to, you know, a million people have asked him, why'd you buy Twitter? Why'd you buy Twitter? And Joe wanted to know really if there was anything in all those reasons and problems he talked about with the platform that really, really was what at the end of the day motivated it.
What was it ultimately that led you to make the decision to do it?
I mean, this is going to sound somewhat melodramatic, but I was worried about that it was having a corrosive effect on civilization, that it was just having a bad impact. I think part of it is that it's where it was located, which is, downtown San Francisco. And while I think San Francisco is a beautiful city and we should really fight hard to kind of right the ship of San Francisco, if you've walked around downtown San Francisco, right near the ex-FKA Twitter headquarters, it's a zombie apocalypse. I mean, it's rough. Have you been in that area?
Not lately, no. Yeah. I've heard.
It's crazy.
I've heard it's crazy. I've heard you really can't believe it until you actually go there.
You can't believe it until you go there. So now you have to say, well, what philosophy led to that outcome? And that philosophy was being piped to Earth. So, a philosophy that would be ordinarily quite niche and geographically constrained, so that the sort of the fallout area would be limited, was effectively given an information a weapon, information technology weapon to propagate what is essentially a mind virus to the rest of Earth. And the outcome of that mind virus is very clear if you walk around the streets of downtown San Francisco. It is the end of civilization.
And it's not just propagating the mind virus, but suppressing any opposing viewpoints.
Yes. Well, in order for the virus to propagate, it must suppress opposing viewpoints. So.
Because it doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
Correct.
I think that's fascinating. I think that's fascinating. And actually, I think that's very intellectually honest about what was happening. You have, and we've said this all along about the fringes on the far left and the far right. They really account for such a minority of voices. Yet they have this outsized influence, one, because they just won't shut up. But two, because the media amplifies it, because ratings matter, and the crazier things that people say, the more people will watch. But also the fringes are so utterly insane that regular people just bow out of the conversation. And that, I think, was really true on Twitter. So not only did you have sort of these fringe voices on Twitter that were really bogarting the conversation on this worldwide platform, but you had Twitter that was clearly unfairly suppressing one side of that debate. You know, you would allow crazy, and this is true for the media in general, not just social media, wild, wild stuff on the far left would be just fine. Like, no problem at all. And then equally fringe stuff on the right would be like, oh my God, absolutely not. Like, cancel that, suppress it, whatever it is. Like, no equal treatment. I'm fine with a focus on if there's truly like some right-wing crazy stuff, I'm fine if the media talks about that. But don't ignore the left-wing crazy stuff. Instead, they get this crazy hall pass. And so that's really what Elon saw, is the mentality that led to the erosion of a once great city in San Francisco was almost what was being spewed out to the rest of the world on Twitter, and then Twitter was suppressing legitimate arguments against it. And so he's like, I wanted to stop that from happening. And he did, with $40 billion. So that's somebody who cares about it quite a bit. It's fascinating to me still to watch Elon Musk get vilified in the way he does, but now you kind of know why. I mean, he is trying to even the playing field, and the left really, really doesn't like it. Okay. All right. We'll get to questions and comments from the live stream coming up next. But if you're thinking about putting your home on the market, it is proper to consider the state of the economy, et cetera. Am I going to get the most for my home? Am I going to get what I need for my home? But actually, there's a lot of built up demand right now because there's not a lot of homes on the market. And so now might be a perfect time to list your home. Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com talked a little bit about how the market, it's a little contrary to what you might think it would be right now.
we should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's actually going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah. So it might be a great time to put your home on the market, but check first and make sure that you talk to Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, because the first thing he's going to do is do a free market analysis for you and really give you some honest advice about how well you're positioned your home would be. You can also start by using their home value calculator at sellwithwes.com. Just plug in your address. They'll tell you how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Questions and comments from the live stream, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat, which will help make up for my swear word tip jar that I have to put in there.
Oh.
Brandy, enjoyed your talk with Seth Dillon this week. Yeah, we had Seth Dillon, the CEO of the Babylon Bee, on Sundays with subscribers. If you haven't watched it, it was a good one. Great to see that Miranda's feeling better. How confident are you that the lawsuit will prompt the city of Seattle to honor the records request prior to the general? 0%. I don't think that we're going to get those records before the general election. Now, I don't think we were going to get them anyway. And now for sure that we have a lawsuit wrapped up in it, we're not going to get them, is my opinion. Because I think if they were to provide them, you know, right after we filed a lawsuit, it might look a little suspicious. And I think they know that. On Bob Kettle. Let me start up higher. On the transgender runner and this whole controversy in Washington State high school cross country, Mary says, shame on all the adults and the teen athletes who participate in these events where insanity rules, and tell parents and young adult athletes boycott events where males are permitted to compete as female. Nothing will change. So many spineless parents out there. It is just astounding. That's tough. I agree with you to a certain extent. I also remember how important high school athletics were to me and how important especially high school speech was to me. And the thought of like sitting out a season or sitting out a state meet would have felt to me like the end of the world, you know, when I was in high school. So I think that's a lot to ask of kids. And it's a lot to ask of parents to decide for kids. That being said, you know what I think would really do it with the entire transgender athlete thing, not only at the high school level, but the collegiate level, mm-hmm. I think, and professional or whatever it is, I think you need to have a couple men who are the best of the best in their field, not like Leah Thomas, who was like the 420th ranked swimmer. Right. And so then was like, you know, competing about on par with women. I think you need to have big, strong, best of the best men who
like
present,
Michael Phelps.
Who present, you know, men say, I'm, you know, going to compete against the women, absolutely just blow women out of the water in every single sport.
Right. How do you?
Until they change it.
Right.
I think you just have to do it to make a point. Because are they going to decide who's, I know some have actual rules and standards for medical interventions you had to have gone through, but others don't. Other sports don't.
Nope.
So yeah,
identify.
So you got to get like men in each sport who are the best of the best to go in to make a point for women. Because apparently women trying to stand up for themselves isn't enough.
No, then you're called transphobe.
You're called a TERF, transgender exclusionary radical feminist.
Right. And I do think that, I mean, we have reached out to a lot of people to push back on this and to get their perspectives, and everyone is so scared to speak.
Parents.
So yep. I that's what's so frustrating to me is that no one's allowed to say, you know, this shouldn't be happening. And if they do, then their face has to be covered or you have to be anonymous or whatever. And I get it because that is the environment we're in. However, people have got to push back unified.
You know what's crazy? That these pro-Hamas protesters at UW have no problem showing their face.
Faces right out there. Mm-hmm.
And no consequences. And you've got parents who are trying to stand up for their student athletes, for their girls, who are shamed into silence and are too mortified because of the consequences to show their face or to say anything.
Isn't that terrible?
That is the society that we have fostered and allowed for. That's a society we have allowed for. And that is a damn shame.
It really is.
All right. Lieutenant Dan says, problem with a lot of these laws is they are subjective. I don't think a bunch of activists protesting to free Palestine at this event on school grounds will be met with the same response. Yep, you're probably right. Angela says, I agree about keeping all things out of the schools, religion, sexuality, protest, etc. Let kids be kids. I tend to agree with you, Angela. On Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, awarding city contracts on the basis of race and gender. Government is strictly prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race. I smell a lawsuit. Let's hope so. On Bob Kettle, who I was very hard on, but I was excited, who I was very tough on today. Mm-hmm. I'm so immature. I was very, okay, seriously.
Another snort.
I don't
wow.
know what's going on with me today. I don't, I'm just like, no consequences. But honestly, he just showed such cowardice. And I don't know if his campaign did that on his behalf, but you're not going to solve anything happening with the city if you continue to kowtow to activists, which is what Reporters at the Stranger are. That's how we got into this mess. And to be like, oh, look at these pictures of me being so, so Democrat. And it's like, really, for the Stranger, you felt the need to do that? Two Ladies Midwest Adventure says, I used to be a Democrat and I walked away too. Yes, the backlash is real. I had family disown us since we walked away. On Inslee and saying the carbon tax last year before it was even before it even started is responsible for all these free rides for youth. Andrea says Sound Transit needs to enforce paying fares in general. Raising the fare of those few of us that pay won't be enough. Brett Hammond says I work in transit. All of a sudden, everyone is a student. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Catherine Smith says, what a moron. We don't name call on here, Catherine. Mm-hmm. The youth aren't taking the bus. They are stealing your Kias. Yeah, that's true. Why do you even put the moron thing in there? You did warn me about it.
I did warn you.
So I don't, I'm like Anchorman. If it's there, I'm going to read it. Okay. Brandon Robillard. Oh, I got a bunch of. Wow,
oh, yeah. This is what I was talking about. You have to go through
all of
them.
You guys are so funny. Was that because you really didn't mind me swearing about that particular thing? So if Mike gets mad at me for swearing, I might have to use that money to buy him something. No, Brandon with a $5 super chat to help the swear and snort jar. Sally S. with $10 toward the swear jar. Elise with $10. Make it a great day. Tracy with $20 for the swear jar. Crafty Grandma Crispy, $25. It's a swear jar kind of day. Vicky Berg with $10 for the snort jar. That gives me 10 snorts. Wow, I could just go, I could go ham. I think Julie Kennedy Consulting, $10 swear jar support donation. This is hilarious. This like genuinely makes my day. Keith Miller, $10 for the dog food swear jar. That's what got it. It's because I said I was going to have to take something away from my dogs.
Which,
if I kept having to pay into the, I mean, you know, the food they get, the grain-free stuff, because too much of it, it hurts their tummies. It's like $80 a bag. Right.
There is cheaper grain-free.
It's like a big bag, but it's way too much.
Well, that's...
And then if we try to change it, Mac gets all sick and diarrhea-y. So we're like, oh my gosh. I told Mike after I quit my job, I was like, you're going to have to get different dog food. It's like an ongoing joke in our household. So anyway, $10 from Keith Miller for dog food and the swear jar.
Gary says, that last comment.
Oh, that's good. Gary says, Inslee will demand a swear jar tax now. That is true. Let's not give him any more ideas. Oh, you guys, I'm having such a blast with all of you today. This is so much fun. All right. I have one more good story for you. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. So you probably started to see the headlines coming out that for some Amazon workers, this is the end of the road for them. We've been covering this story for some time. Amazon told workers, you got to come back to the office. You got to come back to the office. I mean, got all this real estate. We're paying for all this office space. We want the connectivity of you being here, working together. And you had some Amazon workers who absolutely lost their mind over there. They just didn't think it was fair. They'd, you know, come up with plans and maybe they were built their lives around working from home. And I've heard from some of you who are tech workers and said, yes, we don't want to have to go back to the office. We don't need to. It doesn't make any sense. That being said, the message I've always had is it's a job and your employer has the right and the ability to say, come back to work or we're letting you go. You might not like it, but it's not forced labor. This is America and you can make a choice and so can they. I am never surprised by just how aggressively the Seattle Times will shill for Amazon workers.
And I'm not saying that
Amazon, like,
they hate,
like the Everett Herald hates Fortney.
Yes, very good, apt comparison. The Seattle Times despises Amazon. Despises. And look, I don't think it's our job to shill for Amazon either. Amazon doesn't need us shilling for them. No major company needs anyone in the media shilling for them. But you at least have to look at things fairly. You know, for instance, when Seattle was proposing the tax on Amazon, it's like you're singling them out. This huge economic engine for our city, and you're vilifying them, and they're moving jobs to Bellevue. Like, how stupid can you be? So anyway, it's not about, oh, shilling for the workers or shilling for Amazon. Like, be fair. And the Seattle Times has clearly not been fair to Amazon. And they published this sob story from this woman who isn't being fired by Amazon, but resigned herself, I guess, in lieu of she felt as if Amazon was going to fire her. And so she sort of beat him to the punch.
If she doesn't show up for work, then yes, they will fire her.
So it's unbelievable to me that the Seattle Times would dedicate this much page space to this one woman's sob story. The headline, ex-Amazon worker critical of return to office mandate says she was forced out. And as you'll find out, she has no evidence to prove that the Seattle Times presents. So this whole article is based off her feeling like she had to resign from her job. Because she felt like, since she complained about return to office mandates, that she was going to be forced out anyway. So I'm going to read some real unhinged paragraphs here. The woman's name, what is her first name, Nicole? Do you see that? I think I cut her first name out. I don't know if you can find it.
I'll find
Hater. Whatever. She was one of the only then current Amazon employees to take the microphone at a May rally. You may recall Amazon, some workers came out in May and they had a rally saying, we don't want to return to the office. And she was one of the only current Amazon employees who took the microphone at that event. Weeks before, she had created a Slack channel titled hashtag remote advocacy, which became the meeting ground for workers to share concerns about return to office, draft a petition against the policy, and plan the walkout where Hader addressed the crowd with the crowd of hundreds. By August, Hader had left Amazon and accused her former employer of retaliation for her remote work advocacy. Quote, I didn't think anything of it when I started that Slack channel. I didn't even really start it with this idea of activism in mind. I just wanted a space where people could kind of talk, and I myself needed that space. So you started a Slack channel called Remote Advocacy, where you talked about, you drafted a petition against the return to office policy, and where you and your fellow coworkers planned a walkout. Again, a Slack channel called Remote Advocacy, and you're saying it was, I didn't even think of it as with activism in mind. What? It makes no sense.
Her name is Pamela, by the
Pamela.
Way.
Pam Hader. It goes on to say, today, Pam Hader, formerly an executive assistant and program manager at Amazon, is still searching for her next permanent role and suspects her vocal support for remote work may be putting off potential employers.
Speaking bad about your employer publicly?
You don't say. Openly protesting what was your current employer? Creating a Slack channel where employees could plot against the company and plan a walkout, doing interviews with the Seattle Times. That isn't making you someone's ideal candidate for a new hire. That is just shocking stuff. I mean, this is really insane.
And they had the other the other article about the guy who's looking at his last day as November. I mean, this is not a one-off.
These sob stories.
It is
and
ridiculous.
And again, I feel for someone who felt or was led to believe, if that's the case, that they could work from home indefinitely. And then things changed. The company said, come back. They're put in a difficult position. They've worked their lives around work from home. I mean, I get it. Working from home was fun. But again, this isn't forced labor. This isn't North Korea. This isn't a Chinese sweat factory. You have a choice. And considering you were an executive assistant and a program manager at Amazon, I would venture to bet, Pam Hader, that you have a lot of marketable skills and that you could have probably easily gotten a different position with a different tech company. But now, as you suspect, it's kind of becoming hard because the last tech company you worked for, you spoke out against publicly, vilified, suggested that they wrongfully
We're going to terminate you. And now you have, you're pursuing action against them. And you started a Slack channel where people could plan walkouts. What of that do you think is going to make you marketable to another? What do you think is going to make you desirable for another company to take on? Would any company in their right mind say, hey, this woman used to lead walkout protests against her employer and didn't want to follow their policies, and now she's taking legal action against them. Like, let's pick her up. That sounds like a good team member. No, that sounds utterly insane. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A reminder to check out our merch store, because only got 10 of these bad boys left. Our Make Common Sense Great Again hats. We're down to 10, Nicole, and I'm not restocking them. I want these to be limited edition. Limited edition.
You're looking at me like we should restock them. I think we should restock.
Look, I don't know. Not this year.
We'll see about the demand. We'll see.
Maybe a slight tweak. Anyway, there's only 10 of them left. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. And while you're there, support our show. Now I have hat hair. Support our show for $5 a month. Become a subscriber. This is a people-powered podcast. The only way Nicole and I can continue to focus on the show full-time is by the support of you, Undivided subscribers, listeners, viewers. All right, we'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.